Starting Overdrive. Real stories of starting over with Red Seaton.
Hey everyone, welcome to Starting Overdrive, where you'll hear real stories of starting over from real people of all walks of life. I'm your host, Reg Seaton. Welcome to part 6 of the Starting Overdrive Turning Point series called Lost and Found in a New Home. In this new segment of the podcast called Turning Points, I focus on significant life-changing events directly connected to the process of starting over. Events, or turning points, that alter who we are, force us to change direction in life, and let go of everything we once knew. This segment is an exploration into life-defining, irreversible turning points that rock us to the very core of our being and force us to accept change whether we like it or not. It's through these irreversible turning points that we truly learn who we are on the deepest level, what we can handle in life, the true power of the human spirit, and who we are meant to become. On many levels, who we thought we were before these major life-changing events was only preparing us for who we were supposed to be after the turning point. The following story is an extension of the most important, irreversible turning point that changed my life forever. This episode is a continuation from Part 5, called Moving into the Unknown, in which I told the story of boarding a train on the east coast of Canada in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 1993, bound for Vancouver, British Columbia, where I had never been before and didn't know anyone. The decision to move across the entire country of Canada came after my life reached a major crossroads in 1991, 6 years after being hit by a car in 1985, nearly losing my life, waking up from a week-long coma, starting over, and enduring 5 years of recovery, including major brain surgery and other life-saving procedures. After feeling hopeless about my future in Part 4, My Life at a Crossroads, while struggling to resume life after my accident, I chose to leave everything I knew of my life behind on the East Coast in order to start over on the West Coast. I had already lost my family unit, 6 years of my life, and the person I was prior to getting hit by a car. As a result of so much loss, I moved across the entire country by train in May 1993 in search of the unknown life I envisioned for myself. In Part 5, I recalled what it was like to stand at the crossroads of Canada in Winnipeg, Manitoba, after my life reached a major crossroads months earlier, how traveling across the vast expanse of nothing of the prairie provinces was similarly therapeutic to being in a coma, falling asleep to the northern lights in Saskatchewan, how the Rocky Mountains aligned with my soul, and what it was like to arrive in Vancouver to start over after facing so much adversity from my accident on the East Coast. This story, Part 6, is about starting over in a new home, being lost all over again, re-hardwiring my life and belief system, and changing what I didn't like about myself in order to find the person inside myself who I knew I could become, who I knew I was at my core, and who I couldn't become on the East Coast. This story is really about discovering who you truly are as a person without everything you've ever known. I often pose this very question to people. Who are you without the safety and comfort of everything you've ever known? I arrived in Vancouver, British Columbia in May 1993 with $300 in my pocket. I had just enough money to put myself up at the Riviera Hotel in downtown Vancouver for 2 weeks while I hit the streets in search of work. It was do or die. Sink or swim, a race against time. Like I mentioned in the previous episode, I chose to move so far away, across the entire country, coast to coast, 5,800 kilometers, 3,600 miles, so far away that I'd be forced to change my life, that I couldn't simply run home when times got tough. I was determined to make it work. I was determined to find a job, whatever it was, to get me up and running in a new city. Failure wasn't an option, no matter how painful or tough things got on the West Coast. It's difficult to put into words just how much I wanted to change my life. My burning desire to change was deeply tied to how hopeless I felt on the East Coast. After the loss of my family unit, my accident, getting hit by a car, waking up from a coma, all the life-saving surgeries, brain surgeries, knee surgeries, eye surgery, so many more, my 5-year recovery period, in and out of the hospital, being left behind by my friends and peers, struggling to finish school, getting into university, getting out of university with no employment or opportunity on the horizon, the depressed economy of my hometown, being stuck in a dead-end job. It was all too much and far too negative. I was just beginning my adult life. It was supposed to be an exciting time. All that I had been through since getting hit by a car in 1985 left me with deep feelings of inadequacy, like I wasn't good enough. As a kid, I endured similar feelings after being bullied. You know, those illusory feelings of somehow being less than others? Those feelings were only compounded and amplified after my recovery when I started to resume my life as a young adult in a dead-end job, feeling hopeless about my future. The reality was, it wasn't true. I knew that I wasn't inadequate or less than anyone. I had already proven it a few years earlier through sports before my accident. I had already rewritten my own story from unpopular kid to popular after being bullied. I knew what I was capable of accomplishing in life if only given the chance to prove myself. If only given the opportunity of an equal playing field beyond the story and narrative that I was forced to accept living in my hometown. It was, and still is, a feeling of deep knowing. I had to leave my hometown because I knew exactly what I could accomplish on a level playing field with my peers. I couldn't settle for a life of feeling inadequate when I knew it wasn't true. I wanted to change. I needed to change. And after my accident, I had a lot to prove to myself and to others. I wasn't going to allow anyone to write my life story. That's how badly I wanted to change my life. That very first week in Vancouver, back in 1993, I still remember vividly as if it happened yesterday. It was an exciting time. The entire world was open to me. Anything was possible. I was free for the first time in my life. As I walked the streets of Vancouver, there was an electricity in the air, an electricity of possibility rather than impossibility. In 1993, Vancouver was emerging as a world-class city. It was also emerging as a premier location for various Hollywood films and television shows. Vancouver was just beginning to be known as Hollywood North, with such shows as The X-Files, Wise Guy, MacGyver, and 21 Jump Street being filmed in the city at the time of my arrival. It was an exciting time to be out around town. It wasn't unusual to see celebrities in coffee shops, restaurants, or walking around town. It still isn't to this day. Not long after arriving within the first week, I had my first celebrity sighting one night while out getting coffee. It was a great example of the vibe and excitement in the city at the time. Standing in line, waiting for his coffee in front of me, was actor John Ritter. I couldn't believe it. I grew up watching him in Three's Company. He was standing there right in front of me. It was mind-blowing. It was a surreal experience. One minute I'm standing in my hometown feeling hopeless about my future, trapped in the impossibility of circumstance. The next minute I'm standing on the West Coast, the whole world open to me, grabbing a coffee with John Ritter standing in front of me. John freaking Ritter! I still can't believe it to this day. And that became one of many similar experiences to come in the years ahead. My morning and evening routines consisted of scouring the local newspapers and classified sections for work. The days consisted of printing off resumes and walking the streets in search of work. My goal was to put in 12 to 16-hour days looking for work until I found work. I set up an answering machine in the hotel room so that I could get messages when I returned at night. It was 1993 and there were no cell phones. Voicemail wasn't mainstream either. The only way I could get a message was to hook up an answering machine to the phone in the hotel room. If an employer called, at least they'd be able to leave me a personal message and hear my voice at the same time. That was important. The last thing I wanted was for a potential employer to call and be forced to leave a message with the front desk clerk. What if someone called and the clerk forgot to write down the message? Each morning I'd turn on the answering machine and out the door I went in search of work. I'll never forget the first time I looked through the local newspaper in the employment section for work. I was blown away by the amount of available jobs listed in the paper. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were pages upon pages of available jobs. That was unheard of in my hometown at the time. I mean, nearly non-existent. Growing up in the East Coast back then, you just got used to a lack of work and opportunity. At best, there was half a page worth of jobs in the newspaper on a good day back in 1993. You just had to take anything you could find and be happy about having some type of employment. Rarely would you ever see a help wanted sign in a door of a business back east in 1993. They were everywhere in Vancouver when I first arrived. It was like I stepped off the train into a completely different world, where everything was the exact opposite of how I'd grown up. That first year, and to some extent still to this day, was very much like landing on a different planet. I didn't know it at the time until I arrived to experience it firsthand, but the East Coast of Canada is drastically different than the West Coast. The culture, the food, the lifestyle, the geography, the weather, the attitude, the work ethic, the pace, the belief systems, the customs, the diversity, the economy, the politics, the opportunity. Everything on the West Coast was, and is, different than the East Coast. The multitude of differences on the West Coast were a gateway to becoming lost all over again in a new home, a new city, my new life. There were so many cultural differences from what I had known my entire life that, again, like with my accident, coma, and recovery years earlier in 1985, the only thing I could do was surrender to the what is, the now, the what is of how things were done differently on the West Coast. I had to adapt. I had to change. I was starting over on so many levels of life. A week had passed after pounding the pavement in search of work each day. I had hand-delivered over 100 resumes to various businesses in the downtown core of Vancouver and lower mainland of the city. I wasn't searching for a career job. I was in search of something easy to get me started up and running and money coming in quickly. Having worked at various gas stations back east with and for my father, I wanted to get away from that line of work. I wanted to do something different, something on my own. I also didn't want a job in which the only reason why I was working there was because I knew someone. I wanted to make it on my own, through my own merits. Back east, it felt like the best I could do for work was pump gas. It's not that there was anything wrong with the job. I was grateful to have a job back then, especially after my accident. It just worked better when I was 15 or 16. At 23, though, after my accident and out of university, I felt trapped. I knew I could do something different. In fact, I was yearning to do something different. At the same time, I knew that working at a gas station was likely the easiest job for me to get in a new city. By the sixth day of my first week of job searching, with no callbacks, I swallowed my pride and applied for two gas station jobs. One was downtown, only a few blocks from the hotel. The other was a 30-minute bus ride outside the downtown core. Ideally, I was hoping for a job at a coffee shop, record music shop, or a retail sports store, but I knew that it was more important to get set up as quickly as possible and then make changes in the future once I had an apartment and money coming in on a regular basis. Sure enough, on the eighth day of looking for work, the call came. It was for a job interview at the gas station, just outside the downtown core. It wasn't far at all by car, but far enough that you couldn't walk there or back. The next morning, I hopped a city bus, went to the interview, and got the job. They wanted me to start immediately, the next day in the morning. Someone had quit, and they needed someone, fast. The interesting thing was, it wasn't your typical gas station. Certainly not what I was used to in Nova Scotia. The parent company, Esso, was trying something different with this one location. They wanted their service to match the quality of service of the old gas stations of the past in the 1940s and 50s. It was a modern throwback on customer service to create an experience. Each time a car pulled up to the gas pumps, four people would run out and attend to the car. One would check the tires, one would check the oil, one would wash the windows, and the other would pump the gas. Just like the old black and white gas station commercials from the 50s or you'd see in the movies. It was the only gas station in Vancouver that did this type of throwback service. It was new and different from what I had grown up doing at gas stations, with one person doing all four jobs. So, I was excited for the challenge. It was a week after I had arrived, but I couldn't believe how quickly I was able to find work. That would never have happened in my hometown, not in 1993. The entire world was about to open up to me in ways I could only dream about growing up back east. It was the very beginning of making my dreams come true, turning the seemingly impossible into the possible. And it all started with swallowing my pride and taking a job at the gas station. I was at that job for just under 1 year. Within 6 months, I had become one of three assistant managers. I was ready for more responsibility in my life. I was eager to prove myself to the world after having my life put on pause for so many years after getting hit by a car. Very quickly, I was in charge of staff and hiring at the gas station. It was just the opportunity I was looking for to become more responsible and make changes in my life. Looking back now, those memories are still so vivid to me. That first year was such a blur of excitement, learning, self-growth, freedom, independence, and personal development. More profoundly, though, that first year in a new home was a process of unhardwiring, unlearning, and rehardwiring everything about myself and my life. Like I mentioned earlier, the West Coast is drastically different than the East Coast on so many levels. Culturally, economically, diversity, opportunity, attitude, the weather, and more. The reality was back then, and still is today, certain aspects of life on the East Coast of Canada don't translate to the West Coast. There are things I grew up believing on the East Coast that only apply to life on the East Coast. Things that have a drastic and profound impact on your mindset. For example, the differences in the economy on the East Coast as compared to the economy of the West Coast. On the East Coast at the time of 1993, the economy was depressed, with very little opportunity. You have to take anything you can get for work, because jobs are hard to come by in that region. A depressed economy creates a certain type of mindset in which things are harder, less possible, there's little change, progress is slow, and you need to settle for what's available just to survive. When I first arrived in Vancouver, the city was just emerging as a world-class urban location. The population was booming. There were jobs everywhere. People from all over the world were flocking to the city. There was a palpable energy of possibility in the air. The culture produced more of a positive collective growth mindset as opportunities expanded across many sectors of the economy. So, my East Coast belief that I had to stay in a job for years simply because jobs were scarce didn't apply on the West Coast. Growing up back East, there was a lot of fear associated with the very thought of leaving a job. But minimum wage jobs were a dime a dozen in Vancouver at the time. You didn't have to feel trapped because there was more opportunity. That mindset was not applicable to the dynamics on the West Coast. You didn't have to feel trapped because of the economy. It was easier to pivot and change because of the abundance of opportunity. I spent the better part of the first year in Vancouver identifying, unlearning, and unhardwiring various beliefs from my life in the East Coast that didn't serve me well on the West Coast. There were a lot of beliefs from the East Coast that I had to let go. Looking back, the first 2 years of my life on the West Coast were largely spent unlearning and unhardwiring various thought patterns. As a result of the culture and lifestyle on the West Coast, I was constantly challenged in ways I never expected. The reality was, I grew up in what's perceived as a have-not region of Canada due to the depressed economy. Suddenly, I had moved to what's perceived as a more prosperous have region of the country. This isn't a judgment on the regions, better or worse. I'm strictly speaking from a place of observation and fact. There are amazingly positive aspects of both regions. But the fact remains that both coasts are very different and distinct, culturally, geographically, politically, cognitively, and more. Within a depressed economy, there's more of an air of impossibility simply because there's not enough money for certain things to be possible. So, more often than not, you accept that there are many things in life that aren't possible. Over time, that sense of impossibility can heavily influence your mindset and decision-making. One of my favorite things to do back then was to grab a coffee and sit at the beach, English Bay Beach in downtown Vancouver near Stanley Park, staring out at the Pacific Ocean, reflecting on my life and the person I wanted to become. To me, downtown Vancouver was paradise. I lived 10 minutes from the beach on one side of town, 10 minutes away from Stanley Park on the other, and 30 minutes away from the mountains in the distance. It was, and still is, the perfect environment to sit and reflect on change to find solutions. When making changes in your life, it's important to take the time to be still with yourself so you can identify those changes and listen to your soul for the solution. It was so important for me to breathe out the aspects of myself in the East Coast that no longer served me on the West Coast. It was important to align my soul, my spirit, and my identity with my new location. I had to let go of certain things about myself in order to participate fully in the West Coast culture After all, I was now living on the West Coast. Don't get me wrong, I'll always be an East Coaster. That can never be taken away. But I also had to accept that I was now a West Coaster as well. I was creating a new identity for myself. It was a fresh start to becoming the person I knew I could be if given the opportunity. That was exciting to me because there was so much to learn and experience. I wanted desperately to maximize my potential after having my life put on pause. In order to do so, I had to surrender to the West Coast, the unknown, and what I didn't know. As a result, I found myself lost in a new home, but in a way that allowed me to dig deeper into who I truly was as a person, explore the unknown territory within myself, and discover who I really was without everything I've ever known. If there's one dominant theme throughout my life, as you may have figured out through the previous chapters and episodes, it's having to deal with significant, profound loss as a result of change beyond my control. I called it forced change. Change that I didn't choose, but was forced upon me. Change that I had no other choice but to accept and adapt to the consequences. As a result of change being forced upon me, I lost a sense of stability early in my life as a child. I lost my family unit due to dysfunction. I lost the person I was due to a car accident. I lost my identity after waking up from a coma. I lost the normalcy of life as a young man due to so many years in and out of the hospital. And I lost my peers and friends who had passed me by while I desperately tried to catch up in life. Years before I decided to move across the country, starting at an early age, I had already experienced what it was like to lose the safety and familiarity of what was known to me. Those losses were forced upon me. I didn't have a choice but to adapt to life without certain significant knowns in my life. Like I mentioned in the previous two episodes, my life at a crossroads and moving into the unknown, I knew my future was more in the unknown of the West Coast rather than the known of my hometown. I had lost too much of my life on the East Coast. It's not the narrative or story I was willing to accept just as my life was beginning. When I moved to Vancouver, I had left all that was known and familiar to me. I wanted the opportunity to start fresh with a clean slate so I could choose the life I wanted to lead rather than having life forced upon me. That first year, the beach became my sanctuary. Whenever I could, I sat at the beach reflecting on my life and the person I wanted to become, the person I knew I could become. Over time in that first year, I began to have a spiritual awakening from my own stillness. I started to see solutions. In order to become that person in the future, I had to make even more changes. It wasn't enough to simply arrive in a new city and believe everything would fall into place. There was an element of that for sure, from a hope and faith standpoint, but I had to put more effort into myself to make specific lifelong changes. I knew that I was a good person who had a ton of potential after beating the odds, but I also knew there were things that were hardwired into my being that I had to change, negative things that corrupted my self-worth, that could also be self-sabotaging to the end goal of becoming the person I knew I could be in life. Most importantly, that first year, after searching my soul, I had a good knowledge and deep awareness of who I was without everything I'd ever known to keep me safe and comfortable. And because of that, I knew there were things about myself I liked, and there were things about myself that I had to change in order to achieve my goals. And because there were things about myself that needed to change, there was more learning to be done about myself and more unknown internal territory to explore. In order to unhardwire and unlearn negative thought patterns and behaviors that held me back, in my second year, I created my own unique system to change and transform those attributes from negative to positive. I called it the above-the-line formula, or the above-the-line philosophy. It was simple and easy, as long as I was committed to doing the work. On a piece of paper, I drew a straight horizontal line from one side to the other. That line represented my life, my personal development, and where I was as a person. I called that line by my first name, Reg. The line also divided the paper into two halves, an upper half and lower half. The upper half of the paper, above the line, represented my strengths as a person, what I considered to be my assets, all the positive qualities about myself that I liked, that contributed to my happiness, that gave me self-confidence, natural talents that served me well, and the positive assets within myself that helped move me forward toward my goals. Those were all above the line assets, above the line qualities. Things like honesty, dependability, my outgoing personality, my positive outlook, my strong work ethic, my organizational skills, my determination, my resiliency, my patience, my ability to listen, my education, psychology, sociology, my resourcefulness, my ability to problem solve, my ability to see possibilities, and more. Everything I listed above the line were aspects, assets, and qualities of myself that I was happy with, that impacted my self-worth in positive ways, and in many ways came naturally. Work that was already done and qualities that were already hardwired into my being. Below the line, however, the lower half of the paper represented all of my deficiencies and perceived weaknesses. Deficiencies within myself that I wasn't happy with, that contributed to my unhappiness, that negatively impacted my self-worth, that lowered my self-esteem and largely held me back from moving forward. Deficiencies within myself that I wanted to both change and improve, that were holding me back and sabotaging my growth. Things about myself that I knew deep down I wanted to improve, like self-discipline, self-reliance, negative self-talk, personal accountability, prioritization, focus, procrastination, disorganization, complacency, overindulgence, time management, money management, health and fitness, to insecurity, how I handle stress, how I take responsibility, how I deal with conflict, and so much more. It was crucially important for me to identify my strengths and assets along with my weaknesses and deficiencies, to put them all down above and below the line of my life so I could see them visually and to get them out of my head and onto paper. When looking at all the aspects of myself below the line, those deficiencies and weaknesses, the ultimate solution of the above-the-line system became crystal clear. If I truly wanted to become the person I knew I could be, to feel better about myself each and every day, that person I always knew I could be on the East Coast, I had to commit to turning all the below-the-line deficiencies of myself into assets above the line, moving each one from below the line upward to above the line of my life. Once all my below-the-line weaknesses were turned into above-the-line strengths on paper, I would be happier, more self-confident, responsible, accountable, and more, the person I knew I was capable of becoming. The only thing I had to do was commit to changing all the below-the-line weaknesses of myself into above-the-line strengths. That's exactly what I set out to do using my own above-the-line system. By the end of the first year, from May 1993 to May 1994, I had accomplished what I set out to do by moving to the West Coast. I had moved into the unknown, and it was the best decision of my life. My future was now becoming known. I had turned 24 years old that same year, and life was opening up in new, unexpected ways. It was such an exciting time. At 24, though, starting my second year of life in a new city, I felt a sense of hopelessness creep back into my spirit. Although I was doing well and life was more stable than it had been in years, I was unhappy at the gas station in Vancouver. I was unhappy because the job was a byproduct of my life on the East Coast, which I was no longer leading. I knew I could do something else in life. I didn't have to settle for just any job because there was so much opportunity out there to do something different. My job at the gas station represented the person I was on the East Coast, the ghost of my former identity, not the person I was becoming on the West Coast. That feeling of unhappiness slowly gnawed at my soul. It felt as though I was selling myself short. Not just selling myself short, but knowingly staying in a job that was making me miserable by the day. And knowingly staying in a job that was a leftover from my life that I had left. I spent more and more of my free time at the beach, reflecting on my dilemma. Like I previously mentioned, as a result of so many losses, feeling hopeless, and making change, there were things about myself I liked and things about myself that I desperately wanted to change. After accomplishing so much in my first year in Vancouver, there was one major aspect of my life I had to confront. On a deeper level, it was the biggest fear I had to confront from a place of self-worth. I had to answer the question, who was I without a job at a gas station? Who was I without your father's help to get work? That was the deeper issue at the core. It wasn't about the gas station. No matter how hard it was going to be, no matter how long it was going to take, I had to leave the gas station world in order to move forward and step into my own identity once and for all. It was a warm summer night in July at English Bay Beach in Vancouver that I made another profound decision in order to move forward. Sitting on a bench, alone with my coffee, staring into the sunset, I fully committed myself to the process of change. I made a commitment to myself that no matter how long it took, each day I would commit to identifying aspects of myself that needed to change, aspects of myself that were holding me back from the person I wanted to become. Within that decision, I committed to taking daily action on changing the perceived negatives of myself into positives. I didn't care how long it took to change, or what it took to transform those aspects of myself into positives. I was committed to the process. As long as I was committed and taking action, eventually I would become that person. In many ways, making massive change in your life can be simple. You have to make the process simple by focusing your attention more on a micro level of what you need to do, rather than getting caught up in the macro or the bigger picture. By that I mean, there are a lot of things that make up the bigger picture of change, but you can't do everything at once. That's when the process becomes too overwhelming. Change takes time. It's not an overnight process, but it can be simplified by focusing your attention on one thing at a time. One way to simplify the process is to focus on your level of commitment to change, making that commitment and sticking to that commitment. If you truly want to change your life, you have to be committed to the process. You can't change unless you're first committed to changing and doing what it takes. It's just an absolute fact. So rather than focusing on the end result that you want, put all of your energy into the front end of the process and your commitment. Your level of commitment is your own unique fuel for transformation. Maybe one of the things holding you back from making significant change in your life is that you have issues with commitment. Maybe you have a problem making commitments and sticking to them. Maybe you give up too soon. Maybe you don't know how to stay committed to your goals. It's okay. We all have issues like this in our lives. If this is the case, and you do have issues with commitment, then that's where you need to start. It's that simple. For now, temporarily, put the bigger picture of change in your life aside. The first and only thing right now that needs to happen is improving your commitment. Not 20 things, one thing. You need to improve and optimize your level of commitment in order to begin the bigger process of change. Once you improve your commitment and you're staying committed, you feel better about yourself. The great thing is, improving and optimizing your level of commitment is completely possible and within your control. Not long after that night at the beach, committing to my own process of change, creating my own process for change with the above-the-line formula, making a deep promise to myself to create the life I wanted, I decided to leave my job at the gas station. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know what I was going to do for money. I just knew I had to leave and find different work for myself, even if I had to take drastic, massive action. There are times in life when you simply have to make change for the better, even if you don't have everything worked out in advance. Sometimes you just have to find a way to make it work. For me, theoretically, I could have remained at the gas station until I found another job. But I would have been even more unhappy. The reality was, I didn't move all the way across the country to be unhappy or unhappier than I was at the crossroads of my life. The fact that I was still in a job that was essentially a leftover from who I was on the East Coast was eroding my soul and corrupting my happiness. I had to take drastic, massive action to make change in my life in a completely different industry. I left the gas station world in late August of 1994 and never looked back. I didn't have a plan B, plan C, or anything to fall back on for work. There was no safety net, and I have zero regrets to this day. It was one of the best decisions I made for myself because I had to take drastic action, and I had to make massive change immediately. My soul, my spirit, and my potential were all at stake. I made a commitment to myself that no matter how long it took, I was going to find a different line of work. If other people could find work that suited them better, so could I. And it wasn't impossible. I knew it was either going to be easier than expected, or it would be a huge, difficult challenge. Either way, there was no turning back. I was committed. 5 long months later, after nearly exhausting all my options, I received a call and message on my answering machine. It was for a job interview at a Starbucks coffee shop downtown Vancouver. Although Starbucks today is a huge international brand and household name, this was back in 1994 when the company was just emerging as a global coffee force. It was a young, exciting, progressive, and hip company to work for. This may sound strange, but the opportunity was huge to me, especially in the context of everything I had been through. The trauma, my accident, waking up from a coma, all the surgeries, nearly losing my life, the disintegration of my family, the negative experiences, my own crossroads, the hopelessness, and the impossibility I felt throughout my life. In fact, this new job opportunity at a coffee shop was everything. I had to get this job no matter what. I simply refused to have my self-worth tied to circumstances I was no longer living. The sad reality is that society defines who you are by what you do. It's not right, but it's reality. For whatever reason, at the time, public perception of working at a gas station and working at a coffee shop were two completely different things, one more positive in perception than the other. Both jobs paid about the same, but for whatever reason, people somehow deemed you not to be a loser if you worked at a coffee shop, or somehow less of a loser. And I couldn't stand how people were or might have been perceiving me in this way. I wasn't a loser. I knew it. And I wasn't going to settle for anyone projecting that upon me simply because of my job. I don't live my life by those perceptions. I never have. I treat people equally and in turn how they treat me. It doesn't matter to me what you do as long as you're a good person who treats others with kindness and compassion. This job at a coffee shop was the key to my future and gateway to making my dreams come true. I knew it at the time. This opportunity was a make-it-or-break-it moment. It was either going to elevate my life or break my dreams, momentum, and progress. By landing the job at Starbucks, at that time in my life, it would validate the belief I had in myself, of myself, my potential, and what I was capable of accomplishing in life. After my initial interview, which went incredibly well and left me with an amazing feeling of hope, 2 weeks had passed, and I didn't hear anything. At the end of my interview, the manager said he wanted to move me on to the next phase of hiring, but they'd be in touch for the next steps. I thought it was strange to have such a positive interview with an indication of moving forward, and then nothing. Since I lived in the same area as the coffee shop, I popped in to follow up in person. When speaking to the manager, he told me they were still in the process of hiring. He still had my resume, but he was unsure of hiring me because of my experience at the gas station. It was a pivotal moment that I had to take control of on a personal level of honesty. I put the professional aside to speak man to man on a personal level. I had to tell him what the job meant to me, how much it meant to me, and just how much this one opportunity was the gateway to changing my life. I had already moved across the country to change my life. It was about the standards, discipline, leadership, and level of responsibility I was creating for my life. It wasn't about whether I could do the job. Of course I could. It was about being given the opportunity to apply my standards, discipline, leadership, and level of responsibility in a different line of work, allowing that job to benefit from me as an employee, and continuing to move forward in a positive, professional manner. It was about proving why it made sense to invest in me as an employee, because I had already made the investment in myself. As the company was growing, so too was I in a similar way. I left that day, knowing I did the best I could to make my case of why I should be hired and why I was an asset. But I wasn't about to leave it there. I went back several times to follow up within the next 2 weeks. So much so, the manager either got sick of seeing me or he got used to seeing me. Either way, nearly 1 month to the day of my first interview, I was hired on at Starbucks in downtown Vancouver. From that very first shift at the coffee shop at the store, my life opened up in ways I could have never imagined or predicted. It was absolutely incredible what happened to my life after getting hired on at the coffee shop. The people I met and the opportunity that opened up to me was only a dream when I was a kid. One key meeting, however, with a fellow coworker changed my professional life forever. This one meeting led directly to the discovery of my true purpose after so many years of being lost, and also led directly to the biggest opportunity of my life. This was the very beginning of a 20-year career in which I became an early pioneer in one of the most popular online industries. As a result of this one meeting with a coworker, the new job at Starbucks, and new opportunity, my professional world opened up in ways I could have never imagined, taking me to Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Hawaii, Hollywood, and beyond to world premiere red carpets and working with some of the biggest companies and names in the world. After being lost the first 2 years making so much change, I was now found in my new home. Stay tuned for the next episode of Starting Overdrive Turning Points called Finding Your True Purpose, in which I tell the story of how I did just that, how I found my true purpose in life. I woke up one day and made the pivotal decision to take control of my professional life and work to make my dreams come true. Thanks for listening to the Starting Overdrive podcast. Join us next time for another real story of starting over. In the meantime, make sure to follow us on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, Stitcher, and all major podcasting platforms. Head to the Starting Overdrive Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our channels, help us grow, and feel free to share your story of starting over, or even let us know if you relate to any of the issues touched upon in our interviews. You can also find us at the Starting Overdrive podcast at the official site, www.startingoverdrive.com.